You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, How to Turn Your Independent Film into a Money-Making Business by Alex Ferrari. For a free copy of the audiobook, head over to www.filmbizbook.com.
Welcome to the Director Series Podcast, a show dedicated to deconstructing the work of some of cinema's most celebrated and influential film directors. I'm your host, Cameron Bile.
感情を込めて、 ゆっくりとカメラを見て、優しく、 そしてあなたの古い友達に会うように、 言ってください。 カサブランカのボギーのように、 君の瞳に乾杯! Suntory time!
He wants you to turn, look in camera. Okay?
That's all he said.
Coppola spent a great deal of her 20s traveling around the world, developing a particular affection for the city of Tokyo, Japan, and its luxuriously labyrinthine Park Hyatt Hotel. That hotel would serve as the setting for Lost in Translation, her second feature following The Virgin Suicides. Beginning with a series of short stories and personal impressions about the hotel and Tokyo at large, Coppola worked for 6 months to craft a screenplay about an understated love affair between a man nearing the end of his career and a woman just about to start hers, if she could only figure out what she actually wanted to do. Coppola wrote the story with comedy icon Bill Murray in mind, even going so far as to leave hundreds of messages on the actor's private voicemail box and enlisting her friend and fellow director Wes Anderson to make a personal overture. Reportedly operating off of only a verbal agreement from Murray, Coppola and her producer Ross Katz risked $4 million in financing and untold professional humiliation by moving to Tokyo to begin production without a firm contract from their lead actor. Much to their relief, Murray did show up on the first day of production, and as it turns out, he came prepared to deliver some of the finest work of his career. Much of Lost in Translation may be predicated on the comedic absurdities that arise from the culture clash between East and West, but in making a film about a brief moment of romantic connection rather than a conventional plot or story arc, Coppola had to create a sustained atmosphere of subdued emotional tension. The film's storyline is the faintest of sketches. A quietly inquisitive newlywed named Charlotte, played by Scarlett Johansson, travels to Tokyo on a business trip with her husband, but spends most of the time brooding alone in her hotel room.
You're probably just having a midlife crisis. Did you buy a Porsche yet?
You know, I was thinking about buying a Porsche.
She's coaxed out to experience the magic of the city by Murray's Bob Harris, a middle-aged, downwardly mobile American movie star shooting a whiskey campaign that he hopes nobody in the States will ever see. During their various misadventures across the city, Bob and Charlotte develop a unique bond that affords them some respite from their individual marital troubles. It's easy to dismiss the film as a story where, quote-unquote, nothing happens, but to do so misses the point entirely. Coppola's narrative treasures those fleeting moments that make us see the world in a different way. A glance, a brush of fingers, a barely audible whisper in the middle of a crowded plaza. It's a film where every subtle interaction contains emotional magnitudes. The performances are the events. The chemistry between the melancholic Murray and the contemplative Johansson is as sublime as it is unconventional, the meeting of an old soul and a young heart. While Wes Anderson's films Rushmore and The Royal Tenenbaums pioneered the sad Bill Murray persona, Lost in Translation is the film that cemented it, fueling a late-career resurgence that would yield several similarly sensitive performances that continue to this day. Johansson's work here would put her on the map, paving her way to a star and avatar for Coppola herself.
Evelyn Waugh.
What?
Evelyn Waugh was a man.
Oh, come on. She's nice. What? Not, you know, not everybody went to Yale.
The supporting characters further point to the extremely personal nature of Coppola's story, with Giovanni Ribisi's busy, disengaged performance as Charlotte's husband, John, reportedly serving as a veiled reference to Coppola's own husband, director Spike Jonze, from whom she would ultimately split later that year. Anna Faris's bubbly turn as the aggravatingly ditzy actress Kelly is generally considered to be a swipe at Cameron Diaz, who had worked with Jonze on his 1999 feature Being John Malkovich.
What about you? What
I'm here promoting that action movie I did. Yeah! Oh. You know?
One will undoubtedly notice that all these familiar faces are exclusively white, a peculiar choice for a film set entirely in Tokyo. While there are Japanese actors throughout, they exist almost exclusively on the periphery, confined by the narrow scope of the Anglo gaze. This was a major point of contention for the film's many detractors, lending heavy ammunition to their criticisms of Coppola as an overprivileged rich kid with nothing meaningful to say. While Lost in Translation's main cast may not reflect its setting, its cinematography falls very much in line with the observational, interior nature of Japanese filmmaking espoused by directors like Yasujiro Ozu. Lance Accord, who shot Coppola's 1998 short Lick the Star, joins Coppola on her trek across the Pacific to serve as the film's cinematographer. Lost in Translation's visual style is simple, but deceptively so. Every shot is deliberate and thoroughly considered, even in the seemingly haphazard guerrilla filmmaking style setups stolen from uncontrolled locations. Because the aesthetic is so minimal, every composition and the action contained therein must have a specific narrative purpose. This starts with Coppola's choice to shoot on 35mm film stock for its organic, romantic qualities, despite her father and executive producer Francis Ford Coppola's insistence that she shoot on high-definition video because it was the future. Sophia and Accord draw a clear distinction between the tranquil, refined Tokyo contained within the Park Hyatt and the buzzing urban sprawl just beyond its walls. The hotel scenes are often locked off into wide, observational compositions with a shallow focus that abstracts the surrounding city lights into glowing orbs floating in a sea of black. Bob and Charlotte's forays into the city are rendered in the aforementioned handheld, documentary-style photography, partly as a directorial decision, but also because her modest budget precluded Coppola from obtaining permits for every exterior locale she wanted to shoot in. This meant keeping the crew to a minimum, a challenge compounded by the predominantly Japanese crew's linguistic barriers. The effort results in a film that vividly captures the vitality, vibrancy, and unpredictability of urban life. Despite this bifurcated approach, Coppola and Accord maintain a visual continuity by establishing a few visual constants like color, light, and compositional framing devices. Coppola's Tokyo is a megalopolis rendered in dusky blue skies, imposing gray monoliths, and garish neons. They routinely shun artificial film lights, using the ambient glow of the surrounding city as much as possible, an approach that lends a distinct texture to the nocturnal exteriors in particular. Many shots, especially those of the up-close variety, use transparent or translucent framing devices and abstractions, reflections, prisms, lens flares, to break up the image's natural lines into smaller segments, evoking the emotional barriers between the characters while reinforcing a subtle thematic undercurrent about the compartmentalization of modern urban society. This idea arguably informs the evolution of a unique shot that Coppola can claim as a personal signature, akin to generational peer Quentin Tarantino's iconic trunk shot. The Virgin Suicides contained an earlier iteration of this shot, assuming the character's POV looking out on the neighborhood as it rolled by. Lost in Translation flips the angle by mounting the camera to the car's exterior, and peers in on her characters caught in a moment of lonely reverie. They're moving through the world, yet they are also removed from it, enclosed in an alienating bubble of glass and steel. Indeed, Bob and Charlotte can only truly connect with their surroundings once they engage with it on foot. Lost in Translation's musical landscape reflects the interior nature of Coppola's story, sculpted by My Bloody Valentine frontman Kevin Shields using a variety of New Wave and Tokyo Dream Pop tracks. Just as Air had crafted an original song for use as the theme for The Virgin Suicides, Shields contributes a downbeat shoegaze track named City Girl, in addition to My Bloody Valentine's seminal single Sometimes. In boasting further contributions from Death in Vegas, Jesus and Mary Chain, and her husband Thomas Mars's band Phoenix, the film soundtrack is more reflective of Coppola's personal tastes rather than the cultural setting of her story. Nevertheless, the cumulative effect of these tracks is a sublime experience that resonates in perfect harmony with the story's emotional truths. To this day, Lost in Translation arguably remains the quintessential example of Coppola's distinct artistic voice. The quiet, navel-gazing nature of her aesthetic is crystallized here in her treatment of a story that shows subtle growth through observation rather than direct conflict. The air of detached emotionality and feminine mystique that pervades her filmography is embodied in Johansson's performance as the disaffected and lonely Charlotte, often seen languishing in her hotel room in nothing but a t-shirt and underwear. The emotionally distant protagonist, both Bob and Charlotte in this case, is a staple throughout Coppola's filmography. But with Lost in Translation, she uses this archetype to begin another career-long thematic exploration: the malaise of privilege and the ennui of the entertainment industry. Being a successful, albeit fading, movie star, Bob can have anything he wants. And yet, the materialism inherent in his profession leaves him longing for a profound emotional connection. One that he ultimately finds not with his wife or children at home, but with a complete stranger in a foreign land. Coppola's upbringing as a member of one of Hollywood's royal families gives her a unique inside baseball perspective that fundamentally informs Lost in Translation, as well as later works like Somewhere, The Bling Ring, and even A Very Merry Christmas. Just as much as it is about the isolating landscape of Tokyo, Lost in Translation is also about the emptiness of Hollywood. Towards that end, Coppola peppers the film with winking in-jokes to the industry, like Anna Faris's aforementioned ditzy movie star, or any one of Bob's frustrating Suntory shoots.
For relaxing times, make it Suntory time.
Cut
the! The whirlwind shoot for Lost in Translation spanned just 27 days, but in that short amount of time, Coppola manages to capture more emotional truth than three or four Hollywood films combined. This can be attributed in part to her encouragement of Marian Johansson to deviate from her script and improvise, a technique that, funnily enough, would net Coppola her first Oscar for Best Original Screenplay. Coppola's emphasis on improv would also result in perhaps the film's most memorable and dissected moment, Bob's parting words to Charlotte during their final embrace, rendered in an inaudible whisper. The dialogue wasn't planned for. It's a fleeting, beautiful moment of improvisation on Murray's part that fits perfectly into Coppola's established tone, while also conveying the novel idea that audiences aren't always entitled to a character's intimate moments. While technically oriented fans of the film have spent years analyzing the specific audio bite in a bid to parse out Bob's exact words, we can't know what he said with 100% certainty. That ambiguity, however, is the key to the film's profound emotional resonance, occurring at a register just below her conscious awareness. After premiering at Telluride, Lost in Translation quickly accumulated a high regard amongst critics. Many felt the film's sensitive, non-judgmental approach to the otherwise unsavory theme of infidelity represented a new wave in cinematic depictions of love. Academic Marco Abel called it post-romance cinema, a subgenre that offers up a positive view of love and sex while rejecting the romantic ideal of soulmates. The negative reviews, of which admittedly there were many, tended to fixate on Coppola's rendering of Japanese culture from her Caucasian perspective, citing the depiction of Tokyo's native inhabitants within stereotypical constructs as a patronizing choice that undermines her core message. By conventional metrics, however, Lost in Translation was a resounding success, scoring $120 million in worldwide box office receipts and four Oscar nominations for Best Original Screenplay, Best Actor, Best Picture, and Coppola's first nod for direction. With Lost in Translation, Coppola fulfilled the promise she showed with The Virgin Suicides, delivering an achingly beautiful portrait of longing and discovery while consolidating the formal aspects of her artistic aesthetic. Thank you for listening to the Director Series. For a deeper dive into your favorite filmmakers, go to www.directorseries.net. The Director Series is made possible in large part by our generous supporters on Patreon. Please visit us at patreon.com/directorseries to see how your contribution enables the continued production of video essays and text articles on your favorite contemporary and classic film directors. Thank you.